This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Today we bid farewell to the growing season for most herbs and vegetables. Our guest this afternoon is Chuck Voigt of the University of Illinois. He's here to help us wrap up this season and think about next year, and maybe we'll also talk about ways to use the last of this summer's bounty. Chuck is a vegetable and herb extension specialist with the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the U of I Urbana-Champaign. He's also co-author with J.S. Vandermark of Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest, which, by the way, also includes a section on herbs. Listeners, I invite your phone calls this afternoon. Join us with your questions about growing herbs and vegetables and or your favorite ways of using or preserving the last of the herbs and vegetables in your garden or purchased at the local farmers market. Here are the telephone numbers. In the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Hey, good to see you, too.
Thanks for coming in. Well, overall, how did your garden fare this year?
To give myself extra credit, I would say kind of mediocre.
Yeah?
It didn't turn out that well. That kind of got a late start with a variety of things taking up too much time in the early spring here. And then last year, we got by with a late start because the summer was so blazingly hot that we piled up degree days, you know, up to the maximum just about every day there for 6 or 8 weeks, and things just shot forward. This summer, you know, it was, as a human, it was nice to be to be 80 degrees a lot of the time, but we really didn't push the crops forward the way we might have. So I didn't get the catch up that I was hoping for, and now we're kind of, it looks like we can't avoid a frost that's, that seems early if it is sort of near our average first frost date.
We've got to be getting close to the average first frost date.
I think so, but it sounds like we might almost get a freeze later this week, and we're certainly 2 or 3 weeks away from where that normally occurs.
Yeah. Also, it depends where you are in the state, because I know that in northwestern Illinois tonight, Mike Solo is saying 31 degrees. And, of course, to the south, it won't get that cold. I can't remember what the low is tonight for them. 42.
Yeah, and typically, if you look at a state map, it's amazing that you'll have pockets where it's low 30s and another pocket where it's 40, and just a cloud hovering overhead or whatever makes the difference.
Yeah. Well, Sunday, I clipped the last of the basil.
I think that was wise.
Brought it in and put it in some water and have it on a sunny windowsill, and maybe if I'm lucky, I got a cup and a half there. Now the question is, what do I do with the last of the basil?
Yeah, what is most important to you?
I don't know, pasta, or, you know, I was going through Marge Clark's book, because last time you were here, you remembered her, and she's got some marvelous recipes for basil, and that got me thinking, and I thought, boy, I wish I had 7 cups. You know?
Yeah, well, and as we're cleaning up all the stuff from the garden that's going to get frosted, you know, you think of tomatoes and peppers and you know, tomato sauces come to mind. You know, you could use tomatoes, peppers, basil, and that. Minestrone soup comes to mind, you know, something where it's kind of made to clean up the garden. You can kind of throw just about anything in there. Make sure you have a little bit of beans in it so it's authentic, and then you're set.
Yeah. Well, one of the recipes that it was, you know, a lot of Marge's work was one of the things that I really enjoyed about her work and still continue to enjoy about her work is the surprising things she's done that she did over the years with herbs. And one of the things, there's a recipe in the Best of Times for basil lime pound cake. You know? Real surprising kind of thing. I can't imagine what that tastes like. I imagine it's a beautiful green color. But wild, huh?
Yeah, we don't think we don't often think of savory flavors in sweet things.
Yeah.
And I think that the mixture can be interesting. Probably has the capacity to be a disaster too, but I'm sure if Marge did it, it works.
I'm sure it was good. I'm sure it's good, but it's a surprise. You know, the last time you were on, we talked about Marge a little bit, and I mentioned, you know, using herbs to flavor honey, and that was a real surprise too. I failed, however, to mention what herbs might work in honey because somebody after the show said, "Well, what herbs would you use in honey? Lavender would be one,
right?
I don't know what I don't know if basil would work or not. It would kind of add a peppery kind of a note to it.
Yeah, a little clovey, anisey sort of a thing might be okay. I would think thyme would work out well because certainly where bees have hillsides of thyme where they can collect nectar, thyme honey is highly prized. So possibly you could approximate that by infusing it with thyme rather than having the bees do it for you.
Yeah, and that's another thing where you've got the savory and the sweet together. That would really be nice on a biscuit, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Nice hot biscuit. Well, what do you say we talk with a listener this afternoon here? Our first caller this afternoon is joining us from Vincennes, Indiana on the toll-free line. Good afternoon.
Hi.
My
question is about basil and harvesting and drying. What is the best way that you've found to dry basil without having it turn really dark?
Away from as much light as you can get it away from. Probably if you can take the leaves off the stems and dry them on screen trays or something. The faster you dry it, the more color it should retain. And at this season, you want to make sure you get it out of the garden before it's exposed to cold temperatures because that can brown it too. And then if it starts out brown, it's certainly not going to get any greener. But fast and as much out of the light as possible.
Have you had any luck with microwave drying?
It kind of breaks down the structure of the cells and drives off an awful lot of the aromatic compounds. Mm. Possibly if you're going to use it right away and you needed to dry for some reason, maybe, but for any long-term thing, I wouldn't microwave. A food dehydrator would be better because that, you know, within 24 hours would have it crunchy. So maybe that's the way to go if you have access to one of those.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Good luck with preserving the basil. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our guest this afternoon, Chuck Voigt of the University of Illinois. The topic, herbs and vegetables. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Well, we got the tomatoes out and the basil out. What remains in the garden? What's safe to leave there?
Well, things that are under the ground are probably safe for quite a while. Carrots, beets, parsnips, if you have them. Any of the root crops are probably just going to sweeten up as the soil gets cooler.
Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, any of the cabbage family things are going to hold up really well, even through a freeze. It pretty much takes temperatures 20 down in the 20s, low 20s, before they're much affected. Heads of things like cauliflower and broccoli, if they actually get frost settling in on them, might get discolored or damaged some. So if you have cauliflower or broccoli that's just about to be ready, you might want to put something over that so that the frost doesn't physically settle on it and burn it.
Yeah. Those crops that like cool weather, particularly like Brussels sprouts, I mean, that they really sweeten up nicely after cold weather. How long I mean, how much exposure to the cooler temperatures do those kind of plants like?
Well, as much as you can give them.
Yeah.
I mean, I've picked Brussels sprouts in early December, and they're probably the most palatable Brussels sprouts I've ever encountered because they just the combination of the cool weather and the ample moisture and things really stop whatever process makes them so bitter if it's hot.
Let's talk with another listener calling us from Chicago on line 4. Good afternoon, the toll-free line. Hi. Do we have a listener there on line 4? Nope. Okay. Well, you're invited to call us back. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Anything we can be putting into the garden at this point?
Well, I was thinking about that as I was coming over here. I would think really quick crops. You might still sow lettuce or radishes and actually see a usable harvest. With lettuce, it's a little frost or a little freeze susceptible, so you might want to give it some sort of a protection.
Mm-hmm.
Some people put hay bales down each side of the row and just throw something over them when the time comes.
Yeah.
Also, as we get later in the fall, you can fall sow spinach. Have it germinate and then mulch it as the ground freezes and it gets off to a real jump start early in the spring and is wonderful before anything else is even really knows it's time to grow.
Yeah. And garlic, of course, you put that in now.
It is time to plant garlic. The next 2 weeks are prime garlic planting weather. It's a fall bulb, wants to be planted like a tulip or a daffodil, so it gets rooted in, gets that sprout up and gets things going.
Yeah. Now, if we're going to do that for the first time this year, what do we need to know in terms of, you know, a source for good garlic to grow in the garden and how deep it's planted and how it's planted and the type of soil it likes?
How much time do you have, Celeste? there are a number of good garlic sources available. I would suggest if you really are serious about growing garlic that you go to somebody who's selling seed-quality garlic.
Okay,
Seed quality. Garlic has lost the ability to make true seeds, so we break up existing bulbs into the cloves and plant them individually. Variety selection is important. There are what's called hardneck garlics and softneck garlics. 95% or more of what you ever see in a grocery store is softneck garlic that's grown in California or a lot of it's being imported from China now, but it's pretty much all the same variety. It doesn't have a hard central stalk that used to be a flower stalk. Now it makes lots of little bulblets on the top. The hardnecks are higher quality, usually, or at least have more defined flavors, and connoisseurs go on and on about them like wine. So if you can find some nice hardneck garlic, Spanish Roja, something like that.
Okay.
And surf the internet. Under garlic, you can find mail order sources. It's getting a little bit late, and some of their variety selections are probably sold out by this point. Certainly that's something that you can do. Most of the good sources now market that way, in addition to catalogs and more traditional ways. But find a good variety that you want to grow. Get good quality seed, because there are disease problems where it's grown commercially, and they keep the disease-free stuff for their own planting stock and
right.
market through the grocery stores the stuff that they don't trust to plant for themselves. So while you can walk into a grocery store, pick up a bulb of garlic and plant those cloves, you might get by okay. You might not. And some of these diseases, if you once infest the soil with them, basically you can't grow anything in the onion family pretty much forever. So it's not really worth risking that. Okay, how deep? Single cloves, probably 3 inches. And depending, if this isn't the case now, if it happened to be a dry fall, After you plant, you probably want to water them in because you want to encourage them to get rooted in as soon as possible and get as strong a root system as possible so that when the soil freezes and thaws over the winter, they don't get heaved out or have problems. It's also kind of fun. When you look at a garlic clove where it sits next to the other ones in the bulb, usually it'll have two flattened sides. The leaves come out perpendicular to those. So you can kind of arrange your planting based on that. Like I plant mine in rows, so I plant those flat sides perpendicular to the direction of the row, and then the leaves pretty much line up in the row, and then when I want to cultivate between the rows,
they're
out of my way. If you were doing it on raised beds or somewhere else, you might want to plant in the opposite way so that you get a nice array where the leaves are arranged and they capture the sunlight better. It's just a question of how you want to do that. And just for the homeowner growing 12 bulbs, it's probably probably not a big consideration, but it's kind of fun to know that they do that.
Yeah. And then one last thing before we go and talk with another listener, the soil condition, the spot, in the landscape that you might want to look for being a good spot for the garlic.
Full sun if you can manage.
Okay.
Rich soil. The onion family is pretty heavy feeders. With garlic, certainly organic fertilizers, compost, rotted manures, that sort of thing seem to really encourage it. With onions, sometimes you can worry about using those because they tend to have sulfur in them, and that makes onions hotter. With garlic, I think what we like about garlic are the sulfurous compounds, so that's almost a good thing. But rich soil, high in organic matter.
Plenty of sunshine.
Plenty of sunshine, that's
okay.
It.
Let's talk with a listener in Hayworth now on line 4, our toll-free line. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. We have pimentos, cone-shaped red pimentos. And it's the first time we have been able to grow them, and I'm wondering what I can do with them. I know that you can, of course, can them, but is there another way to use them? Can they be used as peppers are used? Fresh?
Yes. It's just a pepper variety. It's it has nice thick walls and is very sweet, but it's genetically, it's not that different from a bell pepper, so you can use them the same way you would use bell peppers. You could stuff them, you could chop them and make sloppy joes. Pretty much anything you can do with a bell pepper, you can do with a pimento pepper. Just remembering that they really do have those nice thick walls.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions are invited about herbs and vegetables. Give us a jingle this afternoon. Chuck Voigt is our guest of the University of Illinois. We're talking this afternoon about wrapping up the growing season, thinking about next year, and ways to use the last of summer's bounty. My name is Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Those phone numbers, if you'd like to join us, if you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. When the cold comes in quickly, like it seems to have done this year, do you find yourself with a lot of harvesting work to do? And how do you approach a quick fall here?
Well, my inborn response is sort of frenetic farmer frantic.
Good alliteration, my friend.
Yes. And there really is something. There's a couple of things that go on. It seems like our energy gets renewed when the weather gets cooler.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing because as the fear of frost comes, it seems like gardeners get energized and you put out this maximum effort. It's sort of like that whole thing where adrenaline pumps through your veins, and you can lift the car off of your child and do massive feats of strength. It seems to affect gardeners that way. The threat of frost, and you can do superhuman things. You can put on a coal miner's hat and go out and harvest tomatoes late into the night and do all sorts of things that you wouldn't normally do. But it seems like we get lulled into a sense of, well, everything's going fine, and obviously frost is going to be late this fall, and I don't have to worry about it. It doesn't seem like that long ago we were sweltering and for it to have turned around this fast, it's hard to get focused. But focused you need to be if you want to salvage those things, because they can go from high quality produce to junk just overnight, literally.
Yeah. Now, do you have a cellar, or do you have some kind of storage facility that you use in addition to probably trying to cook and dry and can and all that?
Sure. Yeah, I have access here to cold storage where I can put some of the roots and tubers and things in there. Back home on the farm, I have buildings where it doesn't freeze inside a building until long after it's frozen outside, just by the nature of the way cold penetrates things.
So we can take advantage of cellars, basements,
sheds,
garage.
Sure. There are whole books written on root cellaring, and you can access one of those through the library or something. And if you really want to get into that, there are ways of storing and maintaining things.
Okay. We've got a number of folks waiting to talk with you this afternoon, Chuck, so let's go next to a listener in Mattoon on line 4. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I have a question about kale. I have some two or three kale plants that are only about 10 inches high. And will they make it?
Kale is one of the hardiest, cold hardy things that there are. Kale in a mild winter will come through the whole thing in pretty good shape.
Yes.
So I think 10 inches high is not a bad size for them to be.
Mm-hmm. Should I? I was wondering about mulching around them. I've had a little bit of straw around them in the dry weather this summer, late summer. And I've kind of pulled it away now, and I wondered if I should mulch them some more with the cold coming on. Or can I just leave them alone?
I think just with cold that's maybe down to 30 degrees, they're so hardy that really isn't going to affect them.
Yeah.
It has to get down, I think, below 20 before kale is really going to show a whole lot of damage.
Uh-huh.
In fact, if there was one thing in my garden that I didn't worry about, that would probably be near the head of the list.
Okay. Yeah, I had some that wintered over last year, and I ate it half the summer.
Right.
It really was great.
Yep.
Okay, well, thank you.
In the British Isles, they count on kale wintering over, and they harvest it through the winter, because they're a little milder than we are.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener, listener in Clifton on line 1. Hi.
Hi. It's my first time for growing turnips. How long can you continue eating the greens? And can you leave the turnip in the ground, or do you have to get it out?
They're going to hold up pretty well, too. Turnip greens might start to show some floppiness after mid-20s. So hopefully that's going to be
a while.
Weeks from now.
Yeah.
I hope once we get this week of Canadian air through our system, I'm hoping that we get a nice Indian summer burst and get another 2 or 3 weeks.
So do I.
Normally, you'd be able to harvest turnip greens pretty much through October. And the roots, as long as the tops are on them, the roots are going to be well insulated from anything that happens above. So unless you get to a point where the ground is freezing hard overnight, which again would require that it get down into the 20s somewhere, they're probably better off in the ground, because the ground, the temperature, the heat in the ground kind of re-radiates back up through the roots and everything, because they're in firm contact when they're where they grew in the soil.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana, line two. Hi.
Hi. I don't, perhaps you mentioned this, but chives do very well if you dig some up and put them in a pot, leave them outside until they go dormant, and then bring them inside and let them sprout again. Are you there?
Yeah, we're right here.
Okay, couldn't tell.
Didn't sound like a question. Sounded like a statement.
and I have a rosemary plant. Actually, it's a multi-generational rosemary plant. I usually manage to kill one off periodically, but I because I forget to water them. But I keep it in a pot, and I stick the pot in the ground in the summertime out in the garden, and then I bring it in for the wintertime. And it's really nice having fresh rosemary that way because I have a sunny window where it'll go. But I'm very mourning my basil because I haven't been able to pay attention to my garden this summer. And so I got only one plastic bag of basil leaves, and I'm not going to make enough pesto to get me through the winter. So this is a plea in case anybody in Champaign-Urbana has extra basil leaves tonight. I'd be happy to call you up and arrange to come pick them up. The other thing I wanted to mention is thinking about flowers that manage to get through frost. And I've noticed that the blue salvia that I really, really enjoy does fine for quite a few frosts. And even as the weather gets cooler, the blue in them changes. It's nice having something in addition to the chrysanthemums mm-hmm. that continues to flower. Maybe there are other ones that people like that seem to be somewhat frost hardy that they might want to call in about. Thanks.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. Asters do well in the fall, right?
Well, depending on the aster. If you're talking about the perennial fall asters, that's their normal bloom time.
Right.
The ones that bloom through the summer, I'm not sure exactly how – they're usually gone by this time.
Yeah, well, ours is a fall perennial and a beautiful plant, but the rabbits have just been terrible. And, you know, and I protected those little guys so long, and now they're just these little scrawny plants. They got a few flowers on them. They're pretty, though. And those, what are those? This is a brand name, I think. Icicle? They're like, are they pansies or are they violets? Or I don't know, but they will flower for you until it snows.
Mm-hmm. Violas and pansies.
That's what it is.
Violas and pansies are very... very cold hardy.
And then it comes back in the spring once.
Often, yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you probably need to do a little bit of a mulch over it after the ground freezes just to kind of give them a leg up. But, yeah, they do make it through once. They sort of pretend they're biennials for that length of time.
Well, they put on a great show in the yard this spring.
Fantastic.
And I thought... you know, they were so nice that I thought, well, if I'd known how beautiful they were, I would have, you know, planted twice as many. So,
they just put in a big planting of pansies and violas out at the Hartley Garden, and I was noticing how nice they looked as the weather gets cooler.
They also look good in pots on the porch for a while too. Now those won't come back. They seem to get really
The freezing and thawing in a pot is a problem. The only way you can get something in a pot to come through would be to bury the pot so that it assumes the temperature of a large mass of soil.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener caller on line 4, the toll-free line in Downs. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. I have bean frames that I cover with plastic sometimes and put in late lettuce. And I'm doing it really late this year, like now, mm-hmm. because I've had an injury. But I've done it this late, and I can have lettuce at Thanksgiving.
Right. That was my point, is that if, as long as you can keep hard frosts off of it, it likes the cool weather. It'll be tender. It'll be sweet. Lettuce is frankly, I like lettuce in the fall way better than I like lettuce any other time of the year.
Right. But my question is, I'm seeding right now.
Right.
And usually I seed and then I put the plastic on later. Should I get that plastic on, like, this week?
I think so, because
it's cold.
Yeah, because I think with sunny days,
they'll like the warmth.
Right, and the sunny days, it'll work like a little greenhouse effect, where the sun will heat it up during the day, and then kind of hold it over the night,
right.
and it'll think it's
so
in
I'll
a better season.
Better germination, right?
Better germination, quicker germination, which since you're under time constraint,
right.
that's the goal.
Yeah. The other thing is that I have had some plants that look like they're just frozen and dead spring back, come back in the spring of lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
And then some, I don't know whether I've had seed that didn't germinate that then germinates early. But if I just sort of ignore these and look at them in late February, early March, I have lettuce again. And it's wonderful.
Well,
I love it.
Sounds good. I'll think of you when I get off the interstate at Downs to go to Bloomington.
You'll see them, actually.
Okay.
Really?
See my little frames there.
Well,
okay.
I'll dress up like a rabbit and come nibbling in your yard.
If you come and knock on the door.
No. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. Next, we're going to go to quickly here, line one. A caller in Chicago, bless his or her heart, calling on a payphone. Hi.
Right. only because I've figured out a way to dry basil so it stays green, am I calling you?
Okay.
I take and I leave them on the stems, and I take maybe two or three stems and tie them together with a twister, usually two. I take and attach them to... And I put them in a brown bag and attach them at the top with tape. Then I close the brown bag with clothespins and hang them on a hanger. And then I hang them from a high pole in my laundry room. And in about two or three weeks, you have beautiful green dried basil. I don't know why it works better than everything else, but it does not turn black.
Yeah, well, the brown paper keeps light off of it.
Right.
And brown the paper actually helps wick the moisture away from it. So
right.
I dry a lot of things in brown paper bags.
Right.
So that's
it really works well. I dry all my basil every year. And then for rosemary, I went through that over, and I know probably other people do it the same way. But I read that, you know, and I wasn't thinking about rosemary is a Mediterranean plant. I was watering it too often. You should almost let the soil in the pot get towards the dry side before you water it. Don't overwater it. And then I found if I mist it every single day and I keep it in the west window during the winter, it does great and it stays till the next summer again.
That's great.
Yeah, that makes sense because there around the Mediterranean, a lot of it seldom gets watered on the roots. It the fog that comes up off the water, the leaves kind of strain it out of the air. So that's sort of natural for them. Sounds like you're on the right track.
Okay.
Well, thanks for calling in. What a trooper.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thanks for the tips. That's really nice. From a payphone. What a nice thing. How about that? Chuck Voigt is our guest here on the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions about herbs and vegetables or tips to share if you've got tips about preserving and or using the last of summer's bounty. Give us a call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Something I planted this year that I had never planted before, lemon verbena, and I've enjoyed it very very much. Now, it looks like that needs to come in pretty soon, too, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
The thing to remember with lemon verbena is that it's a deciduous perennial. So when you bring it in, chances are most or all of the leaves are going to fall off.
Okay.
At which point, most of them get discarded because people say, dead.
Dead.
Actually, not dead, dormant.
Okay.
So keep it in a, you know, kind of a bright, cool location and... When the days start to lengthen in February, March, whatever, depending on what its temperature is, it'll sprout again and should be off to the races if you don't give up on it.
Okay, I did not know that. But one of the things I've done with it that I really enjoyed is flavoring sugar.
Yeah.
Superfine sugar. Oh,
yep.
What a treat!
Lemon verbena tea is fantastic.
Yeah.
Or lemon verbena in regular tea, I think, would be fantastic in lieu of citrus lemon.
Yeah, and one of Marge Clark's recipes is for blueberry muffins with lemon verbena. Excellent with that lemon sugar, that lemon-flavored sugar, a sprinkle on the top.
Lemon verbena is probably my favorite lemon herb.
What a wonderful What a wonderful herb. It should be Herb of the Year one year, don't you think?
We're pretty far. Yeah, okay. We'll put it on the consideration list. I think we're committed through 2010, but past that, yeah. Well, I guess we're open.
And in your book, Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest, you suggest adding it to rice. Nice idea. Now, would you just, those leaves are tough, so would you just finally mince that up or chop it up? Would you just put it in and then take it out?
If you don't find it palatable, depending on how you're cooking
like
the rice, you could drop it in, let the rice suck up all the water, and then just the leaves would be pretty easy to take out. Or, the other thing would be just to, if you want to take the time to dry them, you could just basically powder them, and it might give just a slightly greenish cast to it, but I don't think there's anything unpalatable about the leaves other than the fact that a whole leaf would be.
Yeah. Yeah, just maybe like treat it like a bay leaf. Just pull it out.
Yeah. Either go one way or the other. Either grind it up so that you don't notice it or leave it whole so it's easy to take out.
What a great thing that would be served alongside some fish or chicken, huh?
Yeah, even a few leaves crushed in a pitcher of water.
Really?
In the summer, pitcher of ice water with a few lemon verbena leaves crushed in it's fantastic.
Wow.
Lemon verbena tea is just—I'm getting energized thinking about it.
Now, if lemon verbena is on the consideration list for some time in the—it sounds like the way you said it—the distant future, there must be some herbs of the year selected.
I don't have the list on me.
You don't have the list. But...
I know, garlic is coming up. Garlic is the herb of the year in 2004. And then everybody in the genus Oreganum, the oreganos, the marjorams, the following year.
Yeah.
And then after that, I would have to check the list.
Yeah. Why is garlic considered an herb?
Well, it's a vegetable. It's an herb. It certainly has medicinal qualities.
Yeah.
It's a culinary flavoring.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it be an herb?
I don't know.
The broad definition of an herb is any useful plant. So.
Oh. Okay.
Possibly it was also because I was in charge of leading the choosing, and I really like...
You really like... You're a garlic guy, aren't you?
Yeah.
We could probably do a whole show on garlic, couldn't we?
You betcha.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should think about that. It's something that's available year-round, too,
And
it stores, keeps really well. But elephant garlic is not garlic.
That's right. It's more of a variety of leek.
It's
still an allium, but it's a different species altogether than garlic.
Yeah. Do you like elephant garlic?
It's okay.
It's okay.
I know aficionados that just turn their noses up at the idea of elephant garlic, but I think if you take it for what it is, it's fine. It's not always winter hardy for us here in central Illinois and further north, so that can be a bit of a problem, but...
Yeah,
it's impressive as I'll get out to see.
It sure is.
Ahead of that, that's like a pound for the cloves that are 5 or 6 ounces a piece.
Yeah. With the cooler weather, I'm thinking about roasting some vegetables, and garlic would be great in there. Are other herbs that would work nicely with roasted vegetables? I mean, there are the obvious ones. Thyme would be lovely. Rosemary.
Oh, herbs that would work?
Yeah.
Rosemary, garlic, thyme, basil.
Yeah.
And you can roast, those eggplants that you're saving from the garden, the peppers, potatoes, some of the more traditional things.
Peppers. Tomatoes are really nice roasted.
Yeah, and other root vegetables, carrots, parsnips roasted.
Sure.
gives them that smoky something extra.
Those red onions.
Sure.
Ooh, sounds great. You're going to have lemon verbena tea when you leave, and I'm going to go home and roast vegetables.
There you go.
So before we wrap up here, we've got about 5 minutes left. How do you go about cleaning up things in the garden and preparing for winter? I mean, after you've, gotten all energized and you're out there with your coal miner's hat on with the light, and you've worked through the night getting everything out.
A considerable period of time later, when I get out of traction,
calling the Bengay,
I then I go out and start doing cleanup. You know, you hack down the inevitable weed patches that creep in and get those cleaned up. Depending on what's been growing, you may or may not want to get the tops off of it. Like asparagus, if it hasn't had disease problems, you might want to leave the tops on because they're, for quite a while into the early winter, they're attractive, and then even when they're not, they catch snow and kind of hold things in place. So just do some cleanup, get things on the compost pile. It should be there. Things that are full of weedy seeds, you want to get rid of some other way.
Yeah. And do you ever plant over crops cover crops?
Yes, I'm a big fan of cover crops. My favorite is oats because if you get them in, it's getting a little late to plant oats now because they don't have a lot of growing time. But the nice thing about oats is it grows up, makes a great growth, sops up any sort of leftover fertilizer that might be in the soil, ties it up in its body, and then winter kills over the winter. So you're not faced with oats as a weed problem in the spring like you would be with wheat or rye, which are more traditional things that you would sow. Rye gets up and grows in the spring and will be your number one weed problem until you get it killed. Yeah. It's a great soil holder, soil builder, but it's a little more difficult to manage.
Are there any plants that should be divided at this point in the year before you call it quits? Or is that pretty much
it's getting a little late to do that because of that whole freezing and thawing, frost heaving kind of a thing. Most of the divisions you would either do early in the spring just before or as growth starts, things like tarragon, those things. And then iris, daylilies, those things you usually do mid to late summer so that they have a chance to get reestablished before they go into winter. If you were moving and had to, salvage a clump of daylilies that you got from Aunt Gladys in 1966,
go for it.
You could do that now, but you'd want to mulch them in to after they freeze so that they don't freeze and thaw.
Yeah, I'd like to move some really tiny mums. They're a kind of a dwarf variety, and I'm wondering if I could do that at this point or wait till spring. Huh?
Mums, depending on the winter, mums' winter hardiness seems to be a little iffy anyway, and I think digging them up and transplanting them might be the thing that pushes them over the edge. I think a lot of the potted mums that get bought and potted and planted in mid to late fall have a tough time making it through. I would say wait till just as growth starts in the spring, and then you can break them up, and each little sprout on them will make a bushel basket sized, or well, if they're dwarf, maybe a.
And if I can keep the rabbits away.
It sounds to me like you need to think Haas and Pfeffer.
I don't think I could do that.
Well, at least think about it. It makes a nice daydream.
Yeah. Well. Yosemite Sam is not in my bloodstream, I guess. I can curse them, but I can't shoot them or trap them.
Darn rabbit.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Chuck. We'll see you. Maybe we'll see you before the herb conference.
Yes,
coming up.
Good.
That'd be a great winter break for us.
Okay.
Take care.
Yep.
Chuck Voigt has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He's with the University of Illinois. He's with the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the U of I at Urbana-Champaign. Also the co-author with J.S. Vandermark of Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest, which, by the way, includes a section on herbs.